Welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of Strong Tower Radio, West Central Michigan Media Ministries, or its employees.
Hello and welcome to Strong Tower Radio's Creation Animal Care with Dr. Edie Hanna. Welcome back, Edie.
Thanks. So good to be here today, that's for sure.
We had so much fun in last month's with reptiles.
We did.
At least I did. We came back for more, and we went across the street. Reptarium?
Yep, that was the reptarium across the street, and now we are at?
We are at Legacy.
We are at the Legacy Aquarium.
And it will be very interesting because we're going to look at, in this episode, so we're going to look at exotic mammals. And then in the next episode, we're going to be looking at various water creatures, which will be both fresh water, brackish, that's a mixture of salt water, and fresh water, and then salt water. So this is going to be a great experience. Why don't you lead us in a word of prayer?
Okay, will do. Dear gracious Heavenly Father, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here today. Thank you so much for Jay. Thank you so much for the amazing creation that you have for us to experience. Even if it's in a situation like this, Lord, it's still a blessing, and we learn so much more about you and each other, actually. So thank you so much. Please bless this experience, Lord, and please let our listeners know that you are real and you've created all these things, Lord, and that we give you the glory and honor all the time. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. And Edie, this is a totally different environment to some degree. It has the same design layout. It has, the close encounter glass where you can look at it and very natural, but it's a much bigger building. And we are here on a day, it seems very busy. We couldn't hardly find a parking place.
That is true. I did have to go around at least two and a half times and sit and wait for a few moments. But you know what? It's a blessing that it is so packed because people want to see animals that they don't get to experience on a regular basis. And you know, it's the holiday time of year and people are off, and that's why they're here. And I think it's a great experience, and it brings the flow of finances into places like this because they have to do the upkeep. I mean,
Absolutely.
It's not easy keeping places like this together.
Absolutely.
And it's so spectacular to walk in these doors. And I really hope that our listeners can take a moment, look things up. And if you're in the area ever, please come here because you'll receive the greatest experience and see some of the most beautiful animals that you can see. But sometimes better than a zoo. I'm going to say that.
There's such a wonderful environment here today. And Edie, they have staff positioned throughout the building, and you could just turn around and they're just ready to explain it. And we've had the wonderful experience already. Jay, welcome back to our program.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
Tell us about the two buildings, the Reptarium and the Legacy. This is just an outgrowth of it. Just tell us about the experience, a little bit of the history in this wonderful building.
Awesome. So this building, we don't have a lot of history here. We actually just opened up in April. So we are still so brand new. Haven't even hit that year mark. You know, we're really just... Honestly, if you ask me, we're still just getting our feet wet. Mm. Luckily, we had the experience already across the street, but that was only 6,000 square feet, and over here we've got about 30,000 square feet. But we still do our best to be that same small business feel. We want everything to be hands-on, interactive. We want all the kids to have a great time. We want to make sure the animals are still absolutely as happy as they can be. We want to make sure that people learn so much stuff so that they'll love these animals and protect them.
There's such a festive. I mean, we have whole families that are here, and the adults are just as excited and wanting to share that experience with the children.
Yeah, when we were walking around briefly, I mean, we saw four adults with one of the
snakes.
With one of the guides, and
I didn't see any children.
I know there were no children.
I will tell you, we run our numbers often, and a lot of times, like, we get a lot of just adults coming here just to check it out. And I mean, I think that that's Awesome. That's amazing. It's, you're never too old to want to learn about animals,
it's
right?
It's a great place to be. A great place to be.
Well, we're right now in one of the party rooms.
Yep, birthday parties.
You have, part of your business model is you have the exhibit of animals, but it's also people can come here and have events, and you have birthday parties and other events like that, and it's a destination.
Yes, 100%. So, yeah, we do birthday parties. We do all different sorts of birthday parties. Birthday parties at this building, birthday parties at the building that we were at the last time you guys came. We actually do a program called Zoo to You, where we bring the animals to your house if you're having a party. Mm. And again, just all of the ways to get these kids, like, really loving these animals, and you never know, they'll grow up and they could literally impact the whole world.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So the Bring the Zoo to You, how many animals do you bring when you come?
So it's typically anywhere from about 15 to 20 different animals.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
From snakes, lizards, we'll show up with an alligator. I know you're a big gator.
I'm going to book my party right now. Yeah. A party of one.
Just party of one, just you.
No, you're going to invite people. I know and you will.
And actually very, very soon here, we're actually going to be doing some traveling with our new baby capybara.
Oh, I saw him.
Yeah,
he's
just a little guy. And we only get a short amount of time while he's little enough that we can take him places. So, you know, that'll be a whole nother added feature. Imagine being able to have a birthday party and have a cappy, you know, at
and
your
the
house.
Size difference, but we'll talk about that in a second. But that size
second.
Difference was extraordinary.
Yeah. Well, why don't we just open up that door and go in?
Yeah, why don't we go check them out?
Well, I did want to ask real quick. So do your guides have a particular title, a name?
So this is what I will say. We have multiple different departments that we hire for and that work here. So we have guest service. And that was typically all of the people that you were seeing on the floor in the black shirts that are literally just here for guest service.
Because the one girl knew so much about the fish that was fascinating.
Yeah, so again, we have people that, I mean, some of the people are like going to school for marine biology and things like that. But again, their whole job is just to be on the floor and to educate the people about the animals. Then we have a couple other departments. We have zookeepers. We have an aquatic staff. Where those two teams don't work directly with the public, and then we have like our animal educators that are doing the events, the parties, all the different shows and things like that.
So. Out of curiosity, if somebody was interested, what are the requirements for potentially finding work?
So this is what we love to tell everybody. The requirements to get an interview here are literally just to be over the age of 16. We love to interview everyone and
you
give
can
everybody
work with
an
anybody.
Opportunity. Yeah, you know, because you don't have this array of background of animal knowledge and stuff like that doesn't mean that we wouldn't love to help you learn and grow. So you can always just go online, send an email, and get an interview, and I do all of the hiring, so you might get to sit down with me
get to talk to Jay.
Yeah, right?
Well, open that magic door.
All right.
Okay, here
ready
we go.
For the sound? So we're going to go right into the capybara, okay?
All right, very good. All right, folks, you're hearing waterfalls, and you're hearing people laughing as well, so...
Excuse us,
we
guys.
Have about 16 to
Excuse
20
us.
People surrounding us.
Excuse
and what
us.
Is a capybara?
Excuse
All
us,
right.
guys. Hey, buddy.
We're weaving our
I
way
know.
Through.
We are weaving.
We're going to go in here real quick. Is there another one? Okay.
All right. Very good.
We'll just be quick.
All right. So we're going to be real quick in here.
It's not
because
too often
we have,
you get to walk into
we have an audience.
Exhibit. This exhibit's about 10 feet wide, about 20 feet long.
And everybody has to have their share.
The corners,
yes.
And this is a capybara?
Capybara, yep.
Capybara.
Yep. Bara.
Yep.
And it's looks like a large dog, but with shorter feet.
No,
I don't know
like
what kind of dog
rodent. You've never seen a dog look
what
like this.
What kind of dog have you looked at, Tom? Oh, my goodness. Actually, they have a guinea pig type of appearance in some ways.
Yes.
And their health care is actually geared towards how you would care for a guinea pig.
100%. They are the largest species of rodent in the world. And they are, I tell everybody, it's literally just like a oversized rat. Like they're just as smart, yep. just as intelligent. And they act just like them. Like everything is just like one big rat. So.
And he's just a little under 3 feet long and stands up barely 2 feet high, I'm guessing.
He is 98 pounds though.
He's a
big boy.
He's got some girth on him.
Yeah. And if you see these feet
yes,
here?
Yes, he's got webbed feet.
So the feet are webbed because these guys are semi-aquatic. They spend about 70% of their time in the water, actually. So if you see in here, we've got a nice big pool for him.
Oh, wow.
He gets in there. He swims, does his thing. That's his they only go to the bathroom in the water, so that's his poop water there.
Okay, so they do know the difference of they use their water differently.
Oh, yeah, 100%. He does not go to the bathroom in here.
Oh, sweet, okay.
Rarely ever. Now, this little guy.
So that's almost like a litter box.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, and he knows that.
So. And this is like half a hot tub or jacuzzi.
It does, yes.
Exactly.
It's about
if we want, we're going to step over here. We're just going to let them come in while we do it.
And this is part of the experience. We aren't the only ones in this 10 by 25 foot area. That's part of this. Formula here is you
we
get
have
to
a baby.
Now the baby what size would you call this?
This is like the size of almost like a large rabbit.
Large rabbit. Yeah, I would say that a large rabbit. And this guy is actually only 8 weeks old right now.
8 weeks.
8 weeks. Yeah, we've only had him for about 8 days.
Well, 8 days.
Yeah, he's very new to us. Yeah.
All right, so tell us where you got him from how he adapted and all that good stuff.
Yeah, so the really cool thing is we actually got this guy from the same one as our adult. It's a place called Blake's Exotics down in Florida. He was captive born there. The parents are captive. And we drove down, we got him, and he's honestly been adapting way better than we thought. He's a rodent, so naturally they're nervous regardless. But honestly, as you can see with him being in my arms right now, he really did adjust well. I mean, he's now seeing thousands of people every day, and you could see he does not really have a care in the world.
Oh my goodness.
And he has kind of a medium brown fur. It's about an inch long hair.
Yes, and something really cool about these guys is if you see their nose, their eyes, and their ears are all along the same horizon path. When they sit in the water, they are able to stick that out. So their whole body can be submerged, but all of their critical senses are still out.
Their eyeballs and his ears
and the nose, all along the same line, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Now, I did read up that their gestation period is like 5 to 6 months.
Yes.
So that's a huge, that's a huge difference. And they are social creatures, but sometimes they do like to be in groups.
Yes.
But sometimes they also like to be by themselves.
Yes. So in the wild, you will find them in pretty large herds is what it's called, a group of capybara. You'll find them in pretty large herds. But again, keeping in mind that a lot of these animals that are now like in captivity and have spent a lot of time in captivity, they kind of change. So exactly. It was a big difference for Javi to go from being a lone capybara to now having a crazy little brother. But honestly, he adjusted well. As you can see, he's laying down right now on his side, taking a nap, and Henry is just walking
around. While children are petting him.
And kids are currently in here petting him, and he does not mind at all. This is actually the life that he would love to live. When he doesn't get to do experiences, like when we're closed and things, we actually see like kind of a decline in him. He kind of seems like he gets a little sad, a little upset, which makes us feel like he genuinely misses that interaction.
Oh, wow. And is he, I'm not sure if little baby's trying to nurse, but he's going at the wrong area.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So really what he's doing is really just trying to figure out like, hey, what is that? What are you doing? Because capybara is at about the two-week mark actually get pushed away from the moms anyway. So he's been eating whole foods since he was 2 months old, or 2 weeks old, which would make sense because imagine those big old teeth trying to nurse on a mom.
That would be awful.
Good, right?
And they apparently can approximately have about eight pups. Is that what they're called?
So in the wild, we see them have about 6 to 8 pups. In captivity, we do see a little bit less, normally right around that 4 to 5 mark.
Okay.
And how often do they breed?
So they can breed, since they're mammals, they can breed often, multiple times, within their lifetime. By the time they get pregnant and have a baby.
Well, remember, 5 to 6 months. So
it could be about 2 times a year, but most of the time they need that little bit of a break.
Sure.
Now, they are very specific with what they have to have for nutrition. Yes. Vitamin C is very important to them.
Vitamin C is very important.
Because unable to synthesize.
Yes, right. And that is why here we do a lot of things to supplement that. That's what the guinea pig pellet is. That's almost like just straight vitamin C, to be honest. They get a lot of oranges, a lot of really those high citrus fruits that you would tend to stay away from with other mammals these guys get. And you know a capybara is low in vitamin C deficiency because they lose their hair. So you'll see our guys have all of the hair in the world. Look at that yawn.
they'll have joint swelling sometimes, and then they can have lameness. So that is important to make sure that they have the proper vitamin C.
Yes, and these guys are, as you can tell, more than happy, healthy. We have their heat lamp in here to be able to give them that hot spot when they really want it, all the water. And these guys also still get out, they get all sorts of enrichment multiple times a week.
Yeah. It's interesting, definitely an attraction here.
Yes.
Many pictures and many people.
It is so rare, like I can't even express to people how rare it is. And then to be able to experience this, literally you're right in front of them, they're petting them, and there's no concern about any kind of, you know, issues, whether there's aggressiveness or nothing. I mean, they're literally just laying there.
These guys were raised around it. When we got Javi, he was actually 2.5 weeks old. So Javi has really, really grown up around this. And he just, if you ask me, he really genuinely does love it. He does little tricks. He knows how to stand up and sit down and come up on people's laps. And, you know, he really does love it.
Is he one of the ones that you take sometimes for educational purposes, or he stays behind?
He stays behind now. He used to go when he was a baby, and Javi is just way too large to take to somebody's house. And my favorite fact about capybaras is they have the bite force of a Siberian tiger. So if you ever had him at somebody's house, not that he has ever aggression towards people, but he's a rodent.
Yes.
So he loves anything that he thinks is food, which could be your couch, your floor, the table, literally anything. And that those teeth, I would hate to ruin someone's $1,000 couch with a hobby bite.
So. And with that being said, their dental care is extremely important because their teeth continually grow.
Yeah, so as you see over here, they've got their nice salt block. They absolutely love it. A lot of people do ask us, like, hey, why'd you guys go with such rough texture inside their enclosure? We have seen Javi loves to chew on the concrete, loves to chew on the wood. He loves his salt block, all those things to keep his teeth ground down. And he's really good about it. You can stick your fingers in his mouth and open up his lips to see his teeth. He doesn't have a care in the world.
So why do you have tortoises in the same exhibit?
So we had to go with something that was nice, slow moving, just like the cappies are. And the tortoises, it's honestly about the same terrain for them, you know? They like the little bit of rock to stretch out their joints, little bit of soft hay and straw to take a nap. And as you see, we've got our big, big tortoise in there.
In the litter box.
In the water. Yeah, in the litter box, taking a nap. We cannot keep her out of there. We actually built it that high because we were like, the tortoises won't be able to crawl up and in there. Doesn't matter what we do. She loves it in there. So, we just do our best to keep it clean for her, so it's fine.
Now,
we could take her out right now, and she literally looks at us, gets mad, and goes right back in it. So.
Now, do you worry about, because we know that, I mean, I don't know if you guys have to do parasite control with these guys, but do you have to worry about parasite control then for the tortoise?
No parasite control with the tortoises. A great thing, one, about the tortoises is they almost get all of their water content from the veggies that they eat. Very rarely do we see them drink a lot of the water, but again, one, we keep it nice and clean. Two, although she's sitting in there, she's not taking a lot of that water in, so nothing to be concerned there at all.
Now, originally, they are from South America, is that correct?
Yes.
And then they basically lived outdoors all day long.
Yes.
And like marshland and forests and things like that.
Yeah, so typically you find them in the marshes and very close to water, you know? So again, we do our best to emulate that for them. It's not like we could give them, you know, I would love to be able to give them 4 acres worth of grass and marsh. But at the end of the day, in order for people to protect these animals, they got to be able to have an up-close experience. So we did give them the straw. A lot of people ask, why do we keep the other side of their exhibit concrete? And we do that for a lot of reasons. One, to make sure that their feet are still building those calluses and basically learning how to be rough and tough. And then, of course, still giving them the opportunity to either sit in their little bit of water or go for a nice swim in his 3 feet deep pond.
Now, amazingly enough, in captivity, they can live around 12 years, but even in the wild, they can live to 10.
Exactly, which is phenomenal for a rodent. I will say Javi's parents are right around 8 and 10. Javi's only 2 right now. Henry's, of course, only 8 weeks.
Oh my goodness.
But I was just with Javier's parents when we picked up Henry, and I'll tell you, those things still have so much spunk, and I don't know. I think we're going to have Javi around for a long time.
Oh,
so.
Praise God for that. That's for sure. Now, one of the things about going back to the litter box, you know, these guys actually can they ingest their own feces.
They do.
For
and
nutritional
luckily
purposes.
For us, I think it kind of tends to go away in captivity. Luckily for us, we've never seen Javi or Henry do that. And they like to give us kisses, and I like to hand feed them. And, you know, it's just a lot going on if they're eating their own poop. And again, they don't do that. And we do our monthly health checks and everything. And that was something that we had to make sure they weren't missing. Like, are they eating their poop because they're missing something? Sure. And personally, through research, I think that that's why they do it in the wild. I think that there's something that they can't get as often that we're able to give them in captivity, so therefore they don't have a reason to eat their poop. Almost like a dog. Sometimes they will eat their poop if they feel like they are lacking something. So kind of, I think, the same way with capybaras in the wild and capybaras in captivity.
What is the temperature range? Are they more warm?
They are more warm, hence why we do give them the opportunity to go ahead and
bask
in there. So we used to keep right under their basking spot open, but then Javi got a little too overzealous and would try to climb up there and then bask himself on his pond here, which he's way too big for.
Oh my goodness. So they
can get as warm as 96 degrees right there. Okay. The ambient temperature is kept right around 76, and then varies a couple spots, it's 80 to 85 in here as well.
Well, it looks like we're going to have to look at a few more animals.
I know. I can't
wait.
We're just getting
started.
You're right. We could talk about these.
I'm telling you, I could talk to you about capybaras for a whole hour. Maybe we'll have to have you guys back.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, you don't see those in your kids' Korean books very much.
No, not yet, but I think soon. Capybaras, I mean, they are on the up and coming for most loved animals. And sometimes you get kids coming here and they've got the shirt and the hat and a croc charm and all sorts of capybaras.
Well, if they're able to at least give them the proper environment and make sure they have the proper veterinary care, then who am I to say, right?
Yes, happy, happy animals. All and right, they got their tortoise friends and everything. Everybody's more than happy in here.
And we've had at least three groups of
people coming
people
in, now,
come in while we've been talking.
Yep, here. And Javi did the same thing all the time.
He did.
Took
he
a nap.
Just laid there. So, all right.
Where are we going next, Jay?
We're
going
to go check out the binturong.
Okay.
All right, guys, here we are back again at the Legacy Aquarium with also some mammals. Today we're going to now enter the binturong.
Yes, and what's so amazing here, Dr. Edie, is we're literally going inside the cage.
We are.
Inside the exhibit,
Yes, it's a glass door.
Yeah, it's an exhibit. It's not really a cage. I mean, it's quite a nice little outing here. It's almost like a mini apartment.
Exactly.
It's like a studio apartment. How about that?
You guys ready?
Let's go.
All right, very good. All right, guys.
Just watch that spot. That's P right there.
And this is a tall, tall exhibit.
You're in here. And first and foremost, we're just going to stand here and talk while he inspects. And I tell you what, he is absolutely adorable. And this is a binturong, and also known as a
bear cat. Yep.
So just in case you guys want to know what a bear cat looks like.
And tell us, Jay, how big this binturong is.
All right, so Stitch here is about 22 pounds right now. When he stands up, he's probably about 3.5 feet tall. His tail is about 3.5 feet long as well. The tail is really important.
Yes, it's a
prehensile.
Yes, exactly.
Meaning
extra limb.
Yes, it's literally an extra limb, meaning it can support all of his weight plus about 50%. So when we're in here, you'll see him, he'll wake up and crawl around and he'll hang down by his tail and all sorts of things. Now, I will tell you, binturongs, bear cats are an animal that, like, not a lot of people know about.
They don't.
It's an animal that I'll stand out there, and every day I hear someone say, like, whoa, what is that? Is that a cat? Is it a ferret?
Right.
Is it a bear? You know, and the cool thing is he's not related to any of those animals that I just named. They actually are, the only thing that they are really closely related to is a civet or a genet, which is like a small little tiny, tiny cat. But they act like a raccoon or maybe like a ferret or something like that. So
right now he's quite docile.
I know.
Really, really awesome animal, man. These guys, we named him Stitch because he is a lot like Stitch from Lilo and Stitch, where he can be so, so cuddly. And then other times
he's crazy.
A little bit of a maniac, but we love him. We love him.
He's adorable. Now, if we talk a little bit about their health care while he's here in this vicinity, in this facility.
Yes.
We worry about diabetes.
Yep.
They can actually get diabetes.
Yep.
They can get arthritis.
Yep.
They can get kidney and liver disease and dental problems.
Yes. So a lot of things that we've learned Actually, every single thing that we've ever learned about binturongs is actually only through keeping animals in captivity. Binturongs are not animals that have rarely ever been studied in the wild for a multitude of reasons. One, they're too hard to find out in Southeast Asia. And two, when you find them, they're really hard to track and be able to keep up with the health of them, just because they're hard to, again, locate. I would say that the zoos and things that have done the research that have a lot of these problems about diabetes and kidneys and things like that, I just believe it is poor diet. You know, they know that these guys in the wild do eat a lot of array of different things, meats and things like that, but you can't overdo it. These guys, their main diet is honestly fruit. But you have to make sure that you are doing fruit that's not high citrus, which sometimes make it low sugar, which sometimes makes it hard. You know, I'd say his favorite thing that people don't even realize is he's so funny.
He's just hanging
stretching down.
Oh my.
What are you doing, crazy?
Upside down.
Upside down. Yes, he's stretching right now. But his main and absolute favorite thing to eat is honestly bananas and zucchinis.
Aww.
You know, absolutely loves them. And again, with him now waking up, he might come right over to you guys. He might crawl up you. He is super, super awesome. Here, I'll give you a little Cheerio in your hand.
All right, very
you want to give it to him? And that is not a honey nut Cheerio. That's
okay.
The plain one.
Oh my goodness, so gentle.
And I'll see if I
can
get him to stand
well.
Up for you, so you guys can really see how tall he is. He's like, where are the rest of the treats
I
at?
I know.
Come on, you got it. Show
oh
me
my
that.
Goodness.
Pretty cool, right? Make sure you watch your cord there. Like
oh,
I
yeah,
said,
I will.
He is quite adventurous, and anything that he thinks he can find, he will. He also has a knack for paper, loves paper.
Oh, you do?
So,
okay.
And Dr. Edie has her notes, and
yes.
So...
you startled him.
I know, but
did you forget
moved.
He was in there?
So, one of the things that I'm, you know, they come from Southeast Asia in
yes.
the rainforest.
Yes.
So, what environmental temperature do you have in here?
So, in here we have, honestly, we don't have that much of a gradient. The room stays right around 76 or so, going upwards up top. It can get up to 84. He does have some heating elements up there. But we have learned he absolutely stays away from it. He doesn't like to be too cool or too hot at all. He is a, I want to be just neutral type of animal. And again, I think that that's one of those things that we've learned through keeping these guys in captivity. Just because they live a certain way in the wild, you never know if those things that they've learned is really because they are lacking something or whatever the reason is. He does not like to be too hot. They will also tell you from studying the ones in the wild is that they absolutely love water. They love baths. They love the rain. And I will tell you, this guy hates every thought
Are
of
you
that.
Serious?
He does not want to be anywhere around any of that. A bath time for him
is terror.
It's terror. It's a nightmare for him. I've had him on walks outside, and it started to just like drizzle even, and he does not like it.
Oh my goodness!
But in the wild, I've seen videos of the binturongs like basically sunbathing, but in the rain, stomachs up, letting the rain hit him and things like that. And that is not this guy. But again. Just a little different from being in captivity. His parents were born in captivity.
Okay.
You know, so it just...
I
again,
did notice he was not neutered.
He is not neutered. We tend
That's okay. I
yes,
mean, I know why.
And we tend not to neuter our mammals, you know, unless we have to. If we're going through things like behavioral or, you know, things like that, that's when we would. But we do our best to not alter them, you know,
okay.
In any way. And he, honestly, they said the only thing that we might have a problem with is him overmarking. And he has never peed on a person.
Okay.
Which my friends that have binturongs that they use for experiences, they do actually go through that a lot. Their binturongs do pee on people, and luckily we don't have that problem. And he's litter box trained.
Oh,
so,
my goodness.
I'm pretty impressed with that.
And he needs, his litter boxes don't even have to be that big.
No, he just goes in a little circle and does his thing. Now, I will say, he does like to pee on the floor sometimes when we go to leave him and he gets mad. He knows if he goes to the bathroom on the floor, then someone has to come in here and mop it. So again, very, very, very intelligent.
You know, one thing I got to say is that we're in this glass enclosure that's 8 feet by 8 feet and about 10 feet high. And I'm not sure if they're looking at the Binturong, or if they're looking at us.
Both. Both, right?
Well, I'm going to say this. So I noticed that it smelled interesting in here. And
we're
then
talk about that.
I know. And so then I was like, I'm looking at my notes and stuff, and I'm like, that's what the smell is, because I have a note stating that they smell like buttered popcorn.
They do. Yes. I say it's Fritos. Some people say it's buttered popcorn. But I say it's a little bit more Frito-y. But yeah, these guys, in their urine, there is a little bit of a smell that smells, again, a lot like buttered popcorn.
Well, they have a unique scent gland just underneath their tail.
Yes, so, exactly. Yep.
So they do express that, basically marking territory.
Yes, 100%. So,
and the sad part is that these guys are very threatened species.
Yes, very, very threatened. And again, so that's why it's another cool opportunity, for us to make sure you watch his long tail there. For us to be able to educate people about them, because they don't, people don't even know what this animal is that they should be protecting. So again, another great opportunity to teach the people.
Yep. And their main threats actually are habitat destruction.
Yes.
And then hunting, sadly.
Yes, so sad. A beautiful, beautiful creature. There's two different types. There's a Palawan and a mainland. The mainlands do get like just a little bit bigger. The Palawans, like this guy here, is a little bit on the smaller side. I have friends that work at Nashville Zoo, and I say, look up the one at Nashville Zoo, and you will see the difference. I like Wilbur, but he's not the cutest per se. But you will definitely be able to see, the difference. It's a really big, big animal.
So. And what's interesting, he's very black, but he has just a highlight of
pepper.
White.
Yeah, yes. It's like reverse pepper, right? No.
So they're carnivores, they are foragers.
Yes.
They use their scent and the sound to communicate. Now, amazingly, they actually can make some noises. Now, have you heard him make noises?
So luckily we have not. We hear him make noises when he is honestly like this. Like he'll probably start purring here.
No, he's laying on his back like a cat. And
right between my feet here.
Yes, so he is. When he's like this, it's more cat-like, so sometimes he does purr. And then the only other time that we hear him make noise is if he's upset, like during a bath. He would screech or something like that. But other than that, he does not make a lot of noise. Just watch your leg there.
That's okay.
Sometimes he gets really excited and then he grabs you.
All right. Well, he's a handsome boy. I'll take handsome boys grabbing me anytime. Okay.
Well, I think it's about time for Stitch to probably get back to his nap.
All right. So. Absolutely. And we can talk a little bit more out there, but we want to talk about his hind legs and how special they are.
Yes, 180 degrees. Yeah. You did all your research. Look at you go.
I'm trying.
Yes.
Yes, they can rotate their legs. So backwards, so that they can still grip as they're heading back down face first.
Yes,
so.
And the other cool thing is these guys actually have semi-retractable nails, so they actually can use them when they need. They are out all of the time, but when they need, they actually can take those nails, bring them all the way in, or take them all the way out if they've got to climb up
soft
something really
paw
hard. Very, very soft paw or very, very sharp paw.
Yeah, and they are. They can swim too, and they dive.
Yes, they
but
do.
And yet he doesn't like water.
He does not
like
water. No, and I mean, when I say he doesn't like water, it's like, I mean, it is crazy. And these are, people don't realize, they are very, very agile creatures. So he can go from the floor to the ceiling to your shoulders really, really quickly.
Within seconds.
Yes, literally within seconds.
You let me know what you want me to do and how you want me to get out of here.
We're leaving the enclosure, the glass. Glass house.
The glass house, and yep. I think we're gonna go meet the baby sloth after this.
Okay, awesome, guys. Well, you have just learned more about the Binturong, and hopefully you can take a look at that on your computer and see what exactly they look like. And I'm telling you, if I could, I'd have one, but you know what? You know how, just stick with the regular domestic animals.
Yes.
So thank you so much.
Well, Dr. Edie, we're in another glass enclosure, about 8x8, and a little bit different environment. And this is one of my favorite animals. We saw one similar to it over in the Reptarium.
Do you remember his name, Tom?
No, I don't.
Come on, Tom.
Come on.
Oh, I should.
Drogo.
Drogo.
Yes.
But it's a sloth, and it's my type of animal. I get spooked real easily around animals, and these things don't scare me.
No, probably because you can outrun it, right?
Tom, you want to know why they don't spook you? I think it's because you don't know all the hardcore facts about sloths.
Well, don't tell me about it until after the interview.
Okay, I will. I'll wait then.
Well, this is a male, correct?
No. This is a female. This is our little female baby here. She actually just had a birthday on December 22nd.
So oh my
she's
good.
3 years old now.
And she, it's like a sloth, like you have a stuffy, and it just wraps around your body, and that's what it's
doing. Oh, Jay, that's adorable.
Doing. She has some kind of a blonde hair with a dark undercoating. It gets pretty.
Actually, what it looks like, it's sun bleached. It's somebody who wants to be blonde, and they've bleached their hair, and it's now basically dying off.
Yeah, so. Growing up. It's such a sweet little look. You're looking at Jay just
cuddling it.
Yes. She is my, I will say, she is my absolute baby. She loves me. I love her too, but she really loves me.
Give us an idea of how long she is and about how, she doesn't look too heavy.
I'd say she's only probably about, from nose to the base of the tail there, I'd probably say she's about a foot and a half. She only weighs 12 pounds. Except for before she has to go to the bathroom, then we've seen her weigh about 15
yes,
pounds.
Yes, I was going to say, we were going to talk about that can actually lose 30% of their weight after they've gone to the bathroom.
Yes, I've seen them pee upwards of a half gallon before. It's very impressive.
Because they only go to the bathroom like once a week or even a little bit longer.
Sometimes once every 10 days. Now, I will say this, another one of those things, animals change a little bit in captivity. Drogo is our like real sloth, right? The one that you met across the street.
He is much bigger.
He is like I go to the bathroom once every 8 days or so. Lilo here is I go to the bathroom about 3 times a week because I don't really know how to be a real sloth. And again, just a little bit different, but still very slow animal. Everything metabolizes slow. Everything about him slow. Yes. Slow heart rate. Everything.
Is when they're in the wild? Is there a danger? What is their predators?
So in the wild, one of their greatest
dangers
is actually the green anaconda.
Okay.
And that happens when they go down to the bathroom, which makes them very, very vulnerable at that time. So a lot of times, animals like Lilo, Drogo, although they are super nice animals, when we put them down low, they do change, right? Even as docile and tame as this animal is here, as you see, I'm holding her. If I were to try to put her down on the ground or try to go in while she's on the ground, she's still really kind, but you can definitely tell she is definitely more just high alert, right? Because they know that in the wild, that's when they're most vulnerable.
And stress can be a problem for these guys for sure.
Yeah, so sloths are one of the animals that they stress out very, very easily, and they do not show it. They don't show it well at all. So a lot of times, you know, you won't even know that you've got a sick sloth or something like that almost until it's too late.
Yeah.
The benefit for us, and especially for Lilo here, is I have been in Lilo's life literally when the first time I met her, she was only 4 days old.
Oh,
right?
Goodness.
So at this time, I have already learned everything that I need to know about her. I can tell when she's stressed, and I can tell when she's not. Another one of the things that's like maybe a little bit confrontational, I would call it, is again, having these animals in captivity, the things that would stress a normal sloth out just doesn't stress these guys out, right? Like holding a sloth in the wild, that would be very, very stressful for them,
yes,
right?
Yes, it would be.
They've never been held. They don't want to be held. It would be like if you tried to pet a wild dog, it would be like, what are you doing? Don't touch me. I don't like that because I don't know what that is. Where Lilo, this is actually when she is the least stressed out, is being held.
Sometimes security, we see,
yes, literally as security. As you guys seen when we opened up the door, what did she do? She woke right up and started to come right to
us.
She
did.
And again, learning all these things through keeping animals in captivity and working around them for as long as I have, it really teaches you a lot, right? It teaches you to respect the animals that are in the wild for their own certain reasons, but also being open and aware that animals in captivity sometimes have different needs and wants.
She looks like a girl in love, Jay. That's all I'm going to say. Because
I know.
She just sometimes can't stop
like,
staring at
sometimes
her.
It like embarrasses me.
I know.
I'm like, Lilo, stop looking at me like that. She does. But she just stares up at me like, yes, Dad, you're right. Everything's
and
right.
And I have noticed that sometimes one eye will blink and yes. the other one stays open.
Yes, and again, that all of those slow blinks and things like that, all of that is just showing us that she is like at complete contentness right now. She's just happy and doesn't want to be anywhere else. Drogo, our sloth across the street, has taught me a lot through the years, right? He's a sloth that, again, is one generation out of the wild. So only one generation in captivity, completely different. I can hold him, but you can also tell that it's not his favorite thing in the world. He likes me, so he tolerates it, but he's almost always backwards or reaching for a tree or something like that, which is showing me like he doesn't want to leave. Like, Lilo, if I go to this tree, she's actually just grabbed me tighter. Like, she thought that I was going to be
go.
Like,
yes. Don't
you
know? Put me
and,
back on
and
that
And it does.
Tree.
It just shows us a lot of different things. But again, still grateful for the experience. It makes my life easy. We have to do nail trims.
Okay.
And she is...
Explain how... Those are long claws. They're,
yeah, and they actually... They I just cut them, honestly, last week, not that long ago. So I do my best to try to keep the middle one pretty long.
Longer.
So that way she can still climb okay. around, especially with her ceiling, you know, having all of these little holes in it. I want her still to be able to utilize that.
Yeah. It's so a one-by-one grading
yes,
up there.
So she still sticks her nails in there. But again, just having the opportunity to be able to hold her feet, bring her foot out to where I need to cut and trim. She really doesn't mind at all. And of course, she is a two-toed sloth. But if you see back there, Tom,
there's three.
So in the back legs, there's always three.
Okay.
On any sloth. But
and
the front.
The claws are about an inch and a quarter to inch and a half long.
Yep.
Yeah,
and the front
and
only
curved.
Has two. That's how you know, yeah. two-toed sloth.
Now, are there any other types of sloths?
There are. So there's two different types of two-toed sloth. There's a Linnaeus and a Hoffman's. We have the Linnaeus. The Hoffman's, you really don't see in captivity a lot. They look almost identical, except for their face is almost opposite. So how she has light and then dark as it goes out.
Okay.
The other ones are like really, really dark and then kind of light towards the end.
Okay.
And then you have a three-toed sloth, and those guys are the ones that everyone knows those ones, right? Those other ones, they have like the mask. They just look a lot different. Any stuffed animal or anything like that, that resembles a three-toed sloth. I've never seen a two-toed sloth stuffed animal.
They need equal time.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, right?
Now, the environment in here is about, 75?
So her ambient, the lowest she gets to in here is 77.
Okay.
Is her lowest temperature. And around the room, she has so many different hot and cool points. So that bed there in the corner, that is her coolest
point. It kind of feels cool over
yep,
here.
Yep, and that's exactly where it is. So I have that there purposefully
okay.
for when she gets too warm and at night. She typically goes down there because in the wild, South America will still drop, right? It's not snowing.
Right.
But it definitely, those
cools
temperatures drop. Right, so they have to be able to have that. And then right up here, she actually... The closest that she can get, which is right...
it's about 3 feet below the top of the in the corner up there, and you have heat lamps.
Yes, heat lamps with the branch leading up to it. And right under that branch, she actually can get it to be 108 degrees.
Oh, my goodness.
So it gets really nice and warm up there for her. Of course, we have it to where she cannot get to the heat. But again, she still is a sloth in captivity. So sometimes she'll go over there during the day, and then she'll realize, like, wait a minute, I need to warm up a little bit. So we'll catch her hanging out over here. Her bed, the temperature stays right around 90. And this is where we see her sit the most, or here where it's about 80 degrees in this hammock.
A little hammock.
Yes,
yep,
she
little
loves
kitty
her,
hammock.
She loves her hammock.
They definitely need sunlight, so they have the
those are
know,
power
imitation.
Suns. Yep, those are power suns in there. You see we've got the two different UVB. We have the UVB that she'll still get. She's hanging out in her tree or directly in her bed. So again, keeping the animals in captivity, but still doing our best to emulate everything we can that they would get in the wild.
And then they sleep more than 20 hours a day, is that correct?
So yes, again, that's another one of those things that I just believe in captivity, changes
captivity,
a little
yeah.
bit.
Yeah.
In the wild, I think that they have to sleep that often because they don't know when they're gonna get their next meal. They don't know when they're gonna have to go down. They don't know when a predator is gonna come. Where the benefit, if you ask me, of them being in captivity is we've eliminated all of those things. So don't get me wrong, this girl sleeps a lot, but it's definitely not 20 hours a day. She probably is right around the 16-hour mark or so.
Does she do that at night when you've got...
This girl sleeps whenever she wants.
Okay.
She does, I will say we do see her sleep through the night. She'll get up and maybe go over there and nap there for 3 hours or so, and then she'll get up, come here, sleep for three hours
and then
so
in the cool space, and then the middle cool,
yep.
warm, and then...
Sometimes the warmer, but I have never looked at the cameras at night and seen her just up and you know, taking a stroll around her enclosure. It's just really not her thing. Drogo does that all the time. And again, I think that that's still that one generation out of the wild, which he was never in the wild, but still things that he's just learned.
Are they vocal at all, other than they can hiss when they are in a defense mode?
Listen, so. This little girl right here, when she was a baby, mind you, when we actually got her, so I've been in her life since she was 2 days old, but when we actually bought her up here to Michigan, she was probably about 6 months old, maybe 8 months old, and she was vocal.
Oh,
we would
goodness.
Put her down and she would scream and scream and scream.
How loud is her scream?
Oh, it was loud. It sounded a lot like a, and it would just do the same thing over and over, almost like an alarm.
Oh my
right?
goodness.
Same noise, same tone, over, 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 and over. Now we don't really hear her do it at all, ever. The other day I was in here with her and she got startled. I was working in here. I dropped a screwdriver and it scared her a little bit.
Aww.
And she made the hissing noise then.
Oh, okay.
But that was the first time I've ever heard her even make that noise.
Now, they have interesting dental care.
Yes.
Okay, so they have 18 teeth.
18 teeth.
Up, 10 in their uppers and then 8 in the lowers.
Yes. And
right.
again, those the canine teeth of a sloth, Tom, this is what I was telling you about. People just do not realize how sharp these teeth are. In the wild, they have to be able to cut leaves and so much things out of trees and really also be able to defend themselves. These teeth are like nothing you've ever seen. The bite pressure, luckily, is not as strong as it could be for another mammal, but the teeth are just so sharp. Sometimes she'll let us see them. You guys will see those two big ones.
Your tongue. Okay,
I
am
see
a canine.
Yes, I see the, those two. What we would call canines,
yes,
I guess.
Those two big teeth in there are just absolutely sharp. I have watched her cut through sweet potato like, I mean, it was a piece of butter.
Oh my goodness!
And again, she doesn't have like strong force, like you know, and she doesn't have teeth in the front, right? So I can put my teeth right. I can put my finger right here,
right.
And it's nothing.
Makes
I can feel it. It's pressure, but it's not anything that like. When we meet our friend the armadillo, I would not be doing that with him, right?
Well, we got one more exhibit to go.
Yes, but I want to talk about they have a four-chambered heart.
They do have a four-chambered heart.
Stomach.
Which is really awesome, which helps in that the digestion mm-hmm. and the very, very, very slow metabolism that they have. And again, I really do believe that in captivity, sometimes it changes things. Something that a lot of people don't talk about are the sloth's ears. Their ears,
I
knew Tom was going to say that.
You can't see them,
but they are there.
I will show you. You got to hold yourself up for a second. Let me put my foot up here. She doesn't hold herself. She will let herself slide down.
Look at that. Yeah, Isn't that adorable?
A little mouse ear.
Oh,
exactly.
My goodness.
And these guys have amazing hearing.
Oh,
just
my goodness.
Absolutely amazing. Eyesight, not that great. Nose, absolutely perfect. The nose, the ears, that is primarily what these guys rely on. And again, all of these senses just come together to make such an amazing creature.
Well, that thing is adorable. And I tell you what, she is so in love with you.
She does love me.
And she's really, really cute. And she really does look like one that is just bleach blonde type of human hair.
Yes.
It's crazy. That really does resemble human hair.
So when I give her like a bath and I use like the hair dryer and then her hair is all puffed up like this, it's crazy. It looks like she gets a blowout or something.
Oh my goodness.
The hair is about 3 inches long on the
back.
Yeah,
it's pretty long. When she was a baby, we used to say we were going to like put her in pigtails like this all the time. So.
Oh, she's special. Now, they're solitary pretty much, right?
Yes, I will tell you, they do not like to be around other sloths. She, again, very, very easygoing animal. We've had her like around dogs and things like that to where she smells them and she does not really care. One time we did a little filming thing where she was right next to Drogo, the male sloth, and you could tell both of them were on high alert. No aggression, but definitely both on high alert. Drogo, on the other hand, though, he doesn't want to see a sloth. He doesn't want to see any other sloths.
Seriously?
I think he thinks that he's the only sloth in the whole entire world.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's it. He wants no part of it.
So, I mean, their gestation period is like 6 months. So then how do they mate with each
other? A lot of times they mate and it doesn't end well for one of the sloths.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, it's very, very common for the sloths to injure each other.
Oh, my goodness.
Either directly after that time or during.
Oh, wow.
Yes. People don't realize how aggressive sloths can be. And it's a lot of times people fear for these claws. You know, it's not the claws you have to worry about. the teeth, those things, they can deliver a very nasty bite, especially to each other.
They give birth to just one?
Typically one.
Rarely two?
Yes, rarely ever two. I don't want to say it's unheard of, but rarely ever two.
Okay.
All right, Lilo, thanks for being such a good girl. You guys will see as I let her go, you'll see just how strong she is with those muscles.
She does pull-ups.
She does a lot of pull-ups. A lot better than me. Pull-ups and sit-ups.
Oh my
see you
goodness.
Later, Jay.
And we'll see you.
Well, Dr. Edie, this is the grand finale. They're laughing because we aren't quite sure how this is going to work out. But I told them earlier, I'd seen armadillos and his childhood books.
Yes.
Then I went down to southern Mississippi.
Okay.
And they have armadillos there.
Yes.
Except
a lot different than this guy.
Oh, really? But
yes.
You can tell me more. But I didn't see any live ones. All the ones I ever saw were dead.
That is because that's their biggest threat, is being hit by cars.
Hit by cars.
Yep.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so every time we saw it, we'd say a real live, dead armadillo.
Armadillo, yeah.
But we did eventually see one one time with the headlights, but it was like 20 to 1 or 40 to 1.
Yes.
So, but, okay, we're...
Well, this is going to be interesting because all this guy wants to do is get out of this cage. Well, so I'm... or not. It's not a cage, an enclosure.
His exhibit, yes. Now, this is what I will say. I'm going to... go in,
yes.
And you guys will
you're
see a different.
Him.
Yes, you guys will see a different animal.
When he's engaged in the activities.
Well, the food.
The food.
So that's what he cares about. This guy loves food.
All right.
All right.
This is going to be interesting.
We have one out here, so we don't know.
Come on.
All right.
And again, excuse the smell.
That's okay.
That's okay.
In fact, it actually doesn't smell so bad. So.
Okay.
All right.
So again, this is Brillo, the six-banded armadillo. So really, really, make sure you kind of watch yourself.
I see.
Okay,
yeah. Stepping
You're stepping in the litter box, Tom.
Here.
Okay.
So again, this is a six-banded armadillo. These guys are quite a bit different than that armadillo kind of that you were talking about, or the one that you can see here in America. These guys come from South America. It's actually the largest species of armadillo in the world. It is also the only species of armadillo that can't roll itself into a ball.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So it can't protect itself.
So he still
it can
has this,
to an extent.
He still has this really strong like outer shell here.
Okay, he really looks ridiculous. I'm so sorry.
I think he's cute, kind of. But again, he doesn't have a way to protect the inside of him as a normal armadillo would.
All right. Well, so talk to us about their tongue, because their tongue is used for a couple of things.
Yes, actually. And that's actually why I bought this treat in here right now. So I don't know if you guys can see, this is a dog treat here, a lick mat.
Yep.
But you guys can see that tongue that he has is absolutely phenomenal. It is about 5.5-6 inches long, very, very skinny and very quick. And in the wild, they actually do a lot of burrowing and things like that. So you'll see right now he's using that tongue, moving it all around, hoping, just getting it in all
it's
the crevices.
Very fast.
Very, very fast.
Yeah, I know. When you put, I must say, when you put the treat tricker thinger around, he finished that so quickly that I'm like, okay.
Show
that
him
is,
your tongue.
Oh my
he
goodness.
He says not right now. He says I'm not going to stick it out.
Give us a size on this.
A size bigger than a football. He's probably about 10 pounds now. He's probably about 1.5 feet.
Oh, wow.
He is a big boy. He kind of needs to go on a diet. That's my fault. But again, he loves treats.
About 8 inches in diameter.
Yes. Yes. And absolutely, absolutely awesome. I'm going to save him here from biting.
Multiple toes.
Multiple toes. These guys are like what I call high heel walkers. So when they walk, you know, they walk on their toes. Which is, you know, different than most mammals that, you know, are actually walking on their feet. You guys will see he's pretty quick at doing this puzzle.
He went so fast finishing everything, and I'm like, okay.
Yes, this is actually a level 3 dog puzzle. So we have one level 4 that we're going to move him up to pretty soon here. So these guys, again, are really, really awesome in the wild. They eat a lot of different things. They have pretty strong jaws. Just to be able to crush whatever it is that they find.
All right, what is that?
Oh, you know what that
is.
You know what that is.
All right.
It's the thing that we don't like to talk about. It is also one of the mammals that has the longest of that.
Oh, okay. It's a reproductive organ.
Reproductive organ is what we will call
it. All right.
I assume it's a male.
It is a male.
It is definitely a male. Again, armadillos, they really do. They get a pretty interesting rep, but these animals are... They are pretty awesome, and they actually are really intelligent.
I have heard.
Brillo exactly knows what's going on. He knows we're in here right now. He knows we got some treats. He also knows that people are outside. He's like, if I can get out there, I know that there is some more food that I could get to.
Oh, my goodness.
In the wild, these guys will burrow a couple of feet deep, again, in captivity. He more just wants to be destructive now, so that's kind of why he has the different wood in here and the rocks. We give him the opportunity to rearrange his exhibit as enrichment as much as he pleases.
Now, in captivity, they can live about 20 years, is that correct?
That is correct. Brillo's mom is actually 16, Brillo's dad is about 12, and Brillo here is only 4.
Okay, and then in the wild, oddly enough, they can only live about 10 years.
Yes, I just feel like they have a lot of predators in the wild, especially like this 6-banded armadillo here is a little bit different because this is the larger species, but the 9-banded, the 3-banded, the screaming hairy, all of those ones are so small. Yes, they can protect themselves, but they can still get picked up, kind of by a lot of different things. A lot of times people think that these carry leprosy, and
they can
carry leprosy, except for this is the only species of armadillo that cannot carry leprosy, which I also think that is just absolutely amazing.
Are you serious? So only this breed of armadillo?
Yes, the 6-banded is the only one that cannot.
Oh my goodness. But what about rabies?
No rabies.
Really?
Yep. Cannot carry rabies or leprosy, which is pretty cool. And they are actually immune to a lot of the venomous snakes as well.
That's fascinating.
Which I think is pretty, pretty cool. So again, Brillo, we love him from a distance.
Well, I'm going to say probably he doesn't have any predators and stuff because he's kind of like a little skedaddle little thingy.
Yes. And they are pretty quick. I mean, I will tell you, I've spent my fair share of time down in Florida trying to catch a wild one, and I've caught a lot of stuff in the wild, and an armadillo is not one of them. I really do want to catch one, though. I really want that picture of me holding one, so might have to get it next time.
They almost run around like a shelled pig.
Yes, yes.
Like a shelled piglet.
Yes, yep, just as nervous and neurotic and still inquisitive. So, yes.
Well, they're fascinating. They are cute. It's God's creation, and yes. Of course, you gotta love it.
Yes.
But I tell you what, they're very, very unique.
Yes, that unique.
I mean,
look at the ears, the hair, the toes, everything is just real interesting.
He's
here.
Very pink.
Yes.
And pudgy. Yellowish.
Pudgy. Orange.
Yes, pink and pudgy is what I call them.
So, nail trims, do you do?
So, I only trim his nails. He is the least frequent of all the mammals. I only trim his about twice a year, and I just use the rest of the time to let him run around and grind him down on his own. So.
Okay, and then what about any specialized diet for?
So we do our best to give him a supplement of protein. Sometimes he gets an egg. We do give him pinkies. We do throw bugs inside of his enclosure just so that way he can chase them and still get that stimulation and things like that.
Okay, and then I see that he's alone.
Yes, absolutely. He doesn't want to be around most things. Unless you are bringing him food, he is pretty much just like, no thanks.
Okay. So, now, do they can, I see they can climb probably a little bit.
Yes, he sleeps up there a lot.
And how high is that off the ground? That's a little pedestal.
That's about, I'd say a foot and a half, 2 feet off the ground.
All right,
which
and then.
Which is pretty impressive.
For the females, how many, first of all, what are they called when they're babies? Are they called kits, pups,
I actually things? Don't know that. I actually don't know that.
I was wondering.
I don't know. I would call it an armadillo. I don't know what you would call a baby armadillo. They can have about 2 or 3, though.
Oh, 2 or 3?
Yes.
Okay. Well, all right. Well,
Dr. Edie, we need to complete this program.
I don't want to, Tom.
We thought four animals, and we'd be... running out of, have too much time,
yeah.
But they're so interactive. We are at the Legacy, and there's more than just sea. There's also mammals.
Yes.
This is the, Jay, this is the second of 3 programs we're doing. We're going to go after the water fish and reptiles.
The aquatics, yep.
Yes,
the aquatics. So we're looking forward to this. This is Legacy. It's on Van Dyke Road, yep. just off of M59
and Hall Road.
Yes.
Yep.
And for Dr. Edie Hanna, I'm Tom Mazur for Strong Tower Radio at Creation Animal Care. Take care of your animals.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
God bless. Bye.